Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled.
Film
Conversation.
Hooray! Hooray! Hooray!
Yeah, so once again, it's podcast chatty film time on the old podcast that we chat on. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. With me to have the chat is Abigail Bain.
Hello.
There she is. And Anthony Evans.
Hi there.
There he is. So guys, I picked this week's film. This week's film that we're here to chat about is In a World. It's very hard not to say it in that kind of way, so expect us all doing lame impressions of trailer voiceover people.
Quite.
Abby, could you please give the details of the film?
Yes.
Will she give the details of the film?
We are talking about In a World from 2013. It is about an underachieving voice coach who finds herself competing in the movie trailer voiceover profession against her arrogant father and his protege. It was written and directed by Lake Bell. She also starred in it with Fred Melamed, Michaela Watkins, Rob Corddry, Ken Marino, and Dimitri Martin.
Yeah. So wrote, starred in, and directed by a lady. That's good. That's good. That's hard work. And one chalk one up for the ladies, this film. Good job. Well, that was patronising.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, so I picked this film because I saw the trailer and thought, oh, that looks good. And if anything should have a good trailer, it should be a film about making trailers, so that's good, I guess. I just fancied it. It had Dimitri Martin in, who I quite like as a comedian, and I gave it a try. I think Abby, you and I first saw it. Did we see it in the cinema?
Yes, although I don't actually remember.
Think we did. We bought it as well. That's how we watched it again, and we made Anthony watch it, and now we've all watched it. But yeah, I didn't expect anything other than it being a sort of mildly funny movie about the Hollywood machine, I guess. And it was a bit more of a rom-com than I expected, perhaps, but it's not overtly a rom-com. It's more of just a little comedy about a thing, really, isn't it? What were you guys expecting? Let's ask Abby first.
Well, to be honest, I was coming into this thinking I'm going to see a lot of voice actors in this that I recognise the voice of, and I finally get to see their face. But then, as it panned out, there were a bunch of people in it whose voices I sort of recognised, but then I wasn't sure, so I was just kind of going, "Do I know who you are? I have no idea."
Plus, you don't know. Well, hang on. Are they voice actors or are the actors playing voice actors? Still not sure. I think there must have been cameos from famous voice actors, at least.
Oh yeah, there must have been. I mean, their voices were pretty distinct. There were definitely lots of moments of, "I know that voice. You're from this, aren't you?" Yeah, so I think other than her father, the guy, because he had like a really distinct voice, didn't he? Like,
Yeah.
I've definitely heard that before. I think like everyone else is just kind of cameos, really.
Yeah, well, I think it was the kind of story where you kind of think maybe this is true. It seems like I know she's not related to him, but it's kind of it felt as if that was very plausible. Like it's the sort of script you'd write if you did grow up, it maybe in the shadow of a famous voiceover person or something. It
Yeah.
seemed like a very believable story. Whether it was entirely fiction and she has no experience of that life at all, or if it's based on her own life, I don't know. Why would we do any research? We just watch films and then talk about them, not look them up. What is this, a book? But anyway, Anthony, what were you expecting?
I didn't really know what to expect. The only thing I kind of knew from it was that you guys liked it. And I think I was expecting something good because generally films about films or filmmaking are generally better.
Well, the Oscars usually like a film about the film industry because they're so hideously vain. But
Yeah.
it can be
And
true that when you're interested in film, if a film is about films, that just doubles the interest, surely.
Yeah, and like this one, it was coming at an angle I've never seen before from like the kind of trailer voiceover kind of thing. So I was interested, if not really knowing anything at all about it.
Yeah. What's good about the film is its main character is a lady, and it is kind of about readdressing the balance of women in an industry dominated by men. So it's good that the film is made by the woman who's in it, because it's not a man writing a woman's story. It's very much, here's a big plate of what women can make and give you in terms of comedy and film and stuff. And I thought it tasted very, very nice. And I'm happy for more female-led projects to be made, because it's one of those weirdly unfair balances in media, is that just men dominate on screen and behind the scenes a lot more than women do. Mm. And it's just because we've come from a sexist back history. Back history is our thing. The past is much more sexist than we are now, and it's good to readdress that balance. And this is a good example. That's basically what I'm saying. Very hard not to sound patronising to women when I speak, it seems. Abby, you're a woman.
No, but
tell us, what do you think about the fact that it's such a ladies' film? It's not a ladies' film. What do you think about this issue of women in movies and stuff?
Well, Regina Davis's speech in it covered a lot of the ground that answers that question. And just how women are becoming more prevalent in films, but not in any way that's actually good. It's like it's not like Twilight has been picked to death already, but I'm going to do it some more.
Okay.
Just how she, yes, she's a female lead, but she is so wet and ineffectual and pathetic that I'd rather she didn't exist than give that sort of role model to people.
Yeah, it's often the big famous role models in films and media are slightly rubbish role models. They're kind of stuff that will appeal to teenage girls a bit, and they're not really strong enough women. I mean, it happens. It's not like something like Alien doesn't come along where it's a strong leading woman in a very man-like movie, but the balance just isn't there. You know, 9 times out of 10, if you've got a strong lead, it's a man. That isn't a fact. That's not a statistic. But it feels like women can't be trusted with movies. They must be taken over, at least on the screen, by men. I don't know. It's just, we're moving into the 21st century where sexism and racism are an ironic thing of the past to be laughed at. And we have to have more and more of a 50-50 split, I think, if you're super liberal like I totally am.
Yes.
I feel like I should throw you a bone a little bit here, Rich, and say he is actually super liberal and he's not making this stuff up to cover his bum.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, but no, what you're saying is true, and like it's even worse in this particular sector. In fact, I'd say I don't think I have ever heard a female kind of trailer voiceover artist in my life.
You do get them. You get there's a lot in. For some reason, the radio likes to have slightly seductive women do the radio announcements, and TV shows often are. Next up, we've got another program that isn't sexual in any way, but we're going to make it sound like it is. Oh, Storage Hunters coming soon. Like, you know, they have slightly sexified voiceovers in TV and radio. But yes, trailers, occasionally for a ladies' movie or a girls' movie, it feels right to have a trailer voiceover in that way, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it would do, but like I said, I don't think I've actually heard a female voiceover artist on a film trailer.
Yeah,
I probably have. Like, maybe subconsciously, like in the back of my mind, I didn't care because I'm also super liberal, and it just kind of washed over me. But no, it's definitely like a balance that needs addressing here, because it really did bring it up in the film that, you know what, I never really have heard a female voiceover artist.
No.
Well, not for trailers, because there's loads of them in like animation where there's constantly need for voiceover work. Like, some of the best voice actors in the industry, you know, are women, and even women are very good at doing young boys' voices. I mean, the very fact that Bart Simpson is voiced by a woman, and like Rugrats, I think Tommy is voiced by a woman, and it'd be good if I could name them. This is a good example of how skewed the scales are in film. I can't actually name the women who are brilliant in animated voiceover. Can't think of the names. I know a few men's names, but I don't know any women's names. Like, you know, whether it's the woman who voices Bart Simpson or Spinelli from Recess, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know their names, and that's wrong of me / the industry. I don't know.
Mm.
They're not hailed in such high acclaim, ladies. And it's ridiculous because, you know, it's the 21st century, as I said. So anyway, I mean, it's not only about women's issues. It's just the perspective of a young woman competing with her arrogant dad and the other, you know, men in the industry, and trying to get something that's so predominantly man-dominated gig. But it's just also a comedy about relationships and family and stuff, and I really like it. Did you guys enjoy?
Yeah, I really did enjoy it. I liked, like, indie films of the last kind of decade have, like, taken to, like, using a very improvisational kind of acting and dialogue, and that's really present in this film. And I think it works. Like, I really enjoyed it. It kind of makes it funnier, especially with some of the actors who are clearly really good with the kind of, like, improvisational thing. Specifically, like, Rob Corddry, I remember. And Dimitri Martin was quite good at it as well.
Yeah, he really nails the kind of awkward, trying to be seductive, but in a kind of cool, I'm normal friend kind of way. And he really does a great job of finding that, the funny and the awkwardness, and whether it's a phone call or whether he's offering her a Fanta or something, he really makes it fumble in a hilarious way. I don't know.
Yeah, and okay, I did have one kind of expectation coming in, because I knew it was going to be about, like, the world of voiceover artists. So I was expecting lots of funny noises to be made, which I wasn't let down on.
That's true.
Can you give me an example?
Oh,
you mean like the warm-up stuff?
Yeah, yeah. like because it's, yeah.
Yeah, the old... yeah, just the warm up to speaking. Yeah, when you make your mouth wobble and things.
That sort of training montage they have at one point before the big voiceover gig is particularly good for that.
Yes, yeah, a nice cross section of warm up wobbles. Yeah, you know, the basic outline of the plot is one woman dealing with her dad. Essentially kicking her out of the house because he's moving his relationship on with her stepmother / his trophy wife. I don't know. Let's just talk about the characters, seeing as I'm failing to talk about the general gist of the story. Our main character, played by Lake Bell. That's a really odd name, isn't it?
Tis.
I mean, whatever. But she is a very relatable character to me. I kind of feel like she's my sort of demographic, my type of person. Sort of film literate, a bit nerdy, but not so much so that it's debilitating? Debilitating? Rehabilitating?
Debilitating, yeah.
Debilitating. But anyway, what have you speak? Because I have lost complete track of what I'm trying to say.
We didn't even pick up the first inkling of what you were trying to say there.
Just Lake Bell. Thoughts on Lake Bell? and her character, etc.
I think she did a really good job. It's quite common for people who star, write, and direct to fall down on one of those elements in there. And I think she actually managed to nail all three, pretty much.
Yeah, well, her character is sort of, you know, mildly ambitious, but also, like, she's quite, you know, she's got the right balance of funny, but then timid because she's, you know, hasn't had a lot of success, so she's kind of happy to get almost any gig in voiceover. And she's, you know, she does all right. Like, she has gigs doing voice training initially and stuff, and then she gets offered more and more things as the film goes on by basically stepping in when other people are off and, you know, does their small film voiceover role. And then it's kind of about her getting embroiled in a relationship with one of the other voice actors, and also having to kind of combat her dad on a personal level as well as a sort of job level. And he's a complete...
Yeah.
Oh, he's such an ass. I mean, he's arrogant and yet kind of nice. Like, he's not fully obnoxious and horrible, but he's sort of... It's just his arrogance is his main problem, isn't it?
He still has like that because his, like, I think it's like because his business is his voice and talking. He's got like he's developed like a kind of charm, like a kind of like just natural charm through that. But then because he's such a git, like it kind of works really well and becomes like really smarmy and unlikable.
Yeah. Plus he's her patronizing father who's always going to look down on her like she's a little child. And so he doesn't really listen to people when they talk. And yet at the same time, you know, they do redeem him a little bit at the end. They don't make him a full villain that she's competing against. He still has to be a father at the end and just get a hold of himself a bit. But not before having a complete breakdown and crying and running off at the very the very idea that his daughter would beat him to winning a job.
And another thing I'll bring up at this point, his girlfriend in it. And I kind of like the fact that, like, she's at the beginning, she's introduced as a kind of younger, almost kind of temptress kind of character. But just through implication of what people are saying. And then when you actually meet her, she's like actually super nice and totally good for him.
Yeah.
So I kind of like really liked how that ended, their little kind of little plot there.
Yeah.
And how their relationship was fine.
Yeah.
They didn't have a tiff exactly. She just sort of told him off for being stupid when he was having a cry about her winning. But other than that, it's actually they're really strong and the relationship really works. And it doesn't matter that there's an age difference between them.
Yeah, and like at the beginning, it just kind of sets it up as, oh, we've got the kind of evil stepmother figure coming in. And it's like, no, they just totally forget about that. She's really nice.
Well, I think that's...
I liked it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing to have in it. And it's probably a sign of good writing, because when you expect a kind of... cliched comedy thing where, oh, okay, I see where this is going, and then it's totally not. It's kind of about empowering even the blonde, ditzy Californian trophy wives. It villainizes them a bit because they slag, you know, they slag them off a bit. Like, but because she's a good person and a strong role model, and actually does work quite well with the father despite being much younger. I mean, essentially, we've got a voiceover guy who's, you know, just getting beyond middle-aged. He's basically like a syrupy-voiced bear in a tracksuit.
and
it's a really horrible beige tracksuit a lot of the time. And he thinks he's a lot better looking than he probably is, but he's, you know, he's rich enough and charming enough to get away with it. And he's got a younger wife, but she's not really, really young. She's, you know, I think they established she's just a little bit older than his daughter, who's maybe late 20s, early 30s or whatever. And it is good that essentially when she comes in as a character that we see rather than as being talked about, she is still squeaky voiced and a little bit, you know, ditzy. Not really ditzy. What's the right word? for her character. Naive?
Yeah, I guess.
Just wholesome and kind of nice and upbeat, but squeaky voiced and young and seemingly a misfit, but she still is a confident, strong character, and she basically knows when to step in and knows how to handle this man in her life, and is very loving and caring about it. She doesn't come across like just a trophy wife in it to make a bit of money for when this guy dies, you know? And that is good writing.
There is one particular scene where Carol's just basically been thrown out of the apartment, which is slightly harsh, but because the woman's moving in and she's making all these arguments that she's the same age as me, she's no good for you, she's none of that. And she holds that stance for a bit, but then she sort of takes it on the chin that actually they're kind of happy and there's not much I can do about this, and well, all right then, I guess.
Yeah, and her beef is with her dad, really. Yeah. That's the thing. And it's not just about Carol, actually, and her dad. It's also a story about their whole family unit, because her sister is a big part of the plot as well. Mm. Like, Carol's sister works in a hotel as someone on a desk liaison of some kind.
She's a concierge.
Concierge, yes.
I said that in a weird way, but I'm going with it.
It's fine. And she sort of has a side story about her and her boyfriend and her nearly not quite cheating on him. And it's a little side relationship story going on there that I thought was quite interesting. It was also good to move the focus off of the main character and spread it to being a family story rather than just one woman struggle to beat her dad at her job or something, you know?
Mm. You've reminded me of one of the other things I like about this, and it's the small jokes that happen.
Go on.
For example, at one point, Carol tapes her sister Danny using her dictaphone, which is used throughout for various comedic bits.
Mm.
And then she sends the tape to Danny's husband to try and make amends between them. And he gets the tape, and he's really intrigued, but he doesn't know how to play it. And it was just a small joke that didn't outstay its welcome and made me have a little giggle.
Yeah, because it's one of those things. If you have a dictaphone, you need a dictaphone to play the tapes back on. There's like kind of an outdated piece of technology in many ways. So it was a kind of nice throwaway gag that's just in there. And there's a lot of the jokes are just in the banter. And like Anthony said, there's a kind of ad-libbing thing kind of going on. They're all working off each other, but they all come across super naturalistic and are clearly like funny people anyway, so that the lines really come to life, whether it's sisters arguing with each other or whether it's, you know, office workers, you know, gossiping or whatever. It all really is really filled with subtle comedy.
And yeah, and like, it's not just that, but like the whole film is really like low-key, like all the people are like media people. So we've got like people who work in recording studios. I think Rob Corddry is like an editor or something, and she's like a voiceover artist. And they're not portrayed as glamorous in the slightest. So everything is like really low key.
Yeah, they're just jobbing fairly young to middle-aged like media types who are all just happily getting on with their lives, and this mainly about their sort of interaction together, like whether they're giving each other hassle or, you know, just shooting the breeze between takes or whatever. No.
Yeah.
One of the jokes I quite like between the two sisters is Carol is trying to coax her sister into recording an Irish bloke that's staying in the hotel's voice. And she has to be, like, it's that perfect manipulation where you're friendly, but also trying to get something out of someone. And she keeps, what's the term she keeps using? Like, sister code. Yeah, sister code. And it just, and her sister's like just not having it and going, what's this sister code stuff? Yeah, I'm just trying it out. It's just seeing how that goes. It's like, no, that's not happening. But she, you know, she does do it. And part of the story is about her sister recording this Irish bloke. One of the negative things I'll say, actually, is I really disliked the guy, the Irish guy in the hotel. A, his character was obnoxiously flirty and presumptive and a jerk, but also I thought his accent sounded fake. He didn't sound like a genuine Irish bloke, whether he was or he wasn't. You know?
I know what you mean. I couldn't say for sure whether or not he was Irish. But he wasn't there for long, so...
But he was so smarmy and presumptive and horrible. And she had the hots for him. And I was just like, oh, don't. He's so horrible. Ugh.
Yeah, I agree. He played the part well. I won't comment on the voice. I thought it sounded pretty good.
It just stuck out. It stuck out to me as odd. One of the things actually is it's you're constantly aware of people's voice. Like many times, Carol has to get up and like try and follow someone out of a room and try and record them stealthily because they're like Eastern European or Chinese or something. And there's a lot of comedy done about someone observing other people's mannerisms and speech and stuff. There's some funny moments about that, whether it's like in the laundry or like in the hotel or whatever.
Yeah, and I suppose that's kind of what the kind of final message is. It's about like standing up and being heard, and like how really important kind of your voice is. Not just like in like films or like voiceover, but in real life as well.
Yeah, they have that whole ending where, even though all the way through they've been mocking like California women who have really baby voices and sound cutesy and fake, they mock them all the way through. But then at the end, it still says it's like part of the kind of happy ending is she's now teaching all of these like Californian women with baby voices how to, you know, talk like regular women or assert themselves and not come across like, you know, pathetic baby victims, you know. And I liked it. It was saying, look, it's not the women that are horrible. It's just the manner in which they talk is grating and weird. And I like
that. Yeah, which then is probably portrayed to them through female representation in the media. Oh, do you see?
Clever stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's a particularly good film about women and from the perspective of women, because it's got, you know, Carol, it's got her sister, it's even got the sort of stepmother, girlfriend of the father character in there, and it's got these other side characters who are women, and they all go on a little journey and have a little, like, they become more three-dimensional, and we get a good sense of who they are and, you know, what motivates them and stuff, along with some funny comedy about sandwich bars, which, so, how is the sandwich bar such a funny thing? I've not really heard of them. Like, just having loads of cold cuts. That's such an American idea, that you could have more than one sandwich or two. Like, more than two sandwiches. Like, it's the two of us. Let's put out loads of sandwich fillers and cold cuts and have a sandwich bar. Weird.
I don't know. I think it's got partly to do with Rob Corddry. That only he can say that and make it as funny as it was.
Plus, it was the whole thing comes up out of an ad-libbed line, you know, about what are you making us for tea? And it's like, sandwich. He like looks at his own hand where he's got a sandwich and is like, sandwich bar. And then that becomes a nice, you know, I guess, callback joke later on. And actually, one of the good things is when his, like, Carol's sister... Rob, actually, this is confusing because I haven't mentioned the names of these other characters. So, what's Carol's sister's name?
Danny.
And her husband's name is?
Mo.
Mo. Mo.
Yeah. Mo. It's Mo.
It is Mo.
Mo and Danny's story is kind of about them being married and letting other people in their life get into situations where it could go further than it should. For example, Mo is like in the house doing his work and he has a cute British neighbour who comes in and wants to shower, and he kind of wants to enjoy the moment but also keep it a secret, but he doesn't do anything wrong. He just, you know, lets her shower and doesn't mention that there's a British woman showering in his house while his wife's away. And then on the other side of that, Danny is potentially in a situation to cheat with this Irish bloke she has to interview for her sister and lets it get too far, and people find out about it, but they, you know, they make up and blah blah blah. I think it's good to show that men and women can both be guilty of things, but also work through it.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of moral, if you like, on that bit. is the difference between thinking about something and doing something.
Yeah. And Danny, you know, does kiss this guy, but, you know, doesn't go the full hog. I thought they played it really well. Like, it was really emotional when they confronted each other, and it was kind of about getting found out and reacting to that, and it all happens because of this dictaphone has recorded the flirty conversation they had and stuff, and the fact that she's lied about having a husband and stuff. And I think it really plays it, like, even though we've had lots of comedy, it's got a strong emotional story in there throughout.
Yeah.
And we have just plain funny bits, like when Carol is in the party and she's in the secret room of her rival colleague, the voiceover guy who's throwing the party.
Gustav,
yeah. His secret room, she's in there. They do it with each other, but not before he kisses her nose and kind of sucks on her nose as a sort of build-up to their lovemaking. Did you guys enjoy that?
It's the fact he did it more than once.
Yeah.
If he'd have done it once, I would have thought, oh, perhaps he learned something in another country about how that's an erogenous sort of something. He does it twice, and you sort of go, this guy is such a weirdo.
Yeah, but she still goes with it. And what's extra good is it's after quite a tender moment where he sort of, you never quite believe him, like, because he seems like he's lying all the time, and his character in other parts of the film is that of a manipulative, you know, chauvinistic man. But he's kind of saying how he's travelled around the world and it's his own personal room where he comes to feel like alone, and, you know, he gets very kind of emotional and kind of, you know, he gets very tender, and then he kind of just kisses her, sucks her nose. Like, it's just really nice. It's just a nice scene that plays out really well. And I like that it has both really good emotional moments and these weird bits of comedy, you know. Even in the relationship with Dimitri Martin's character, that's sort of comedic most of the way through, and he behaves quite bizarrely to try and get, you know, her attention when they're having an argument. And there's a whole kind of depth to their characters and the comedy, and then there's still a lovely intimacy and niceness about their relationship when it goes from just friends to being a bit more than that. And they have a montage where they behave like Japanese schoolgirls, essentially, and do karaoke and dance machines and arcade stuff.
Yeah, and also, it's just, again, it's not quite typical. It's like with the relationship with the father and his girlfriend. They kind of set it up in a certain way where, like, Dimitri Martin's character, what's his name?
Louis?
Like, it's set up as the kind of, oh, well, obviously he's going to be the love rival, but he's going to be too awkward and too shy to ask her out until something happens. But, like, halfway through, they kind of drop it, and he just kind of, like, goes, do you know what? I'm going to ask you out. And then it just kind of goes from there. I just kind of like that. The movie is always setting up certain things and then going a different direction, which is always good.
It does. It really says, oh, look, we could so easily go the typical romance comedy genre formula. And it just goes, nah, I'm going to be realistic and normal and have people be funny and just normal characters.
It's the kind of point, like, when a film stops kind of being like real life, that's when it kind of goes off on the weird kind of things like, okay, a person in real life wouldn't say that. Or they wouldn't lie about this. So this is where the film kind of starts. But in this, it's just kind of like, well, no, this is real life. So people would just be open and this is how it would happen. Yeah. Not this ridiculous kind of glamorized Hollywood version of it.
Yeah, like a good example of that is Gustav, who does sleep with her before knowing she's a potential voiceover rival who's been stealing his work and potentially going to get a big, well-paid gig. The whole inner world gig that she's going after and has been offered. And then, you know, it's kind of about them all fighting to do this inner world re-franchising, rebranding. They're kind of re-something. be. They are bringing back the Inner World voiceover style, and they're all competing for it. The dad, the daughter, and Gustav. And even after they both realise, oh, we're rivals now, and I've slept with you, and it could potentially build to a big Hollywood rivalry and a falling out, and he gets taught a lesson. But it doesn't really go that way. It kind of goes, no, he just accepts it and is normal and fine by the end. He stays himself, and it doesn't escalate. He doesn't become like Billy Zane's characters and become super evil and gets defeated, you know?
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that people sort of end up, you know, people learn lessons, and it does have happy endings and stuff, and she does win the job, and but then, you know, she gets told why, and it's a bit more realistic, and it's not a feel-good silly movie. It's just a feel-good relatable comedy with loads of, like, surprising, you know, jokes and subtle humour. There's loads of side characters that just play little roles that are really good, but there's not much to say about them other than they played it well and it's kind of funny. Any other parts you want to discuss, guys?
I suppose before we talk about like some of the minor characters, we should talk about... at the beginning, they have a kind of tribute to the voiceover artist Don LaFontaine, like the guy who kind of popularized the kind of "In a World" kind of voice and trailer thing. And that was a kind of a nice little start, I think.
Yeah, it kind of sets up the scene pretty well, gives us the context, and shows us that it is a slightly self-aggrandizing world, but at the same time, they're not as big as people who appear on screen, yet they do just as much work and as much acting and voiceover. Yet because we don't see them, we don't care about them, is kind of the feeling. But within the industry, they're heavily respected people. And it's a big competitive world, and, you know.
Yeah, not only that, and the little tribute was... It kind of made me want to watch, like, a documentary, maybe, about the man and the world of voiceover artists.
I thought you were going to say...
I don't know, it was a nice way for the film to start and kind of suck you in.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, it made me wish he wasn't dead. Like, I thought that's what you were going to say, but okay. Yeah, it does seem like an intriguing world, though. anything else, Abby? I mean, we haven't talked about every element of the film, but that's the thing with comedies. If you get into the little details, you suddenly, you know, pull them apart and it's not as funny. But is there anything you want to bring up so we can discuss?
No, I think we've pretty much covered all the stuff that I wanted to cover. There are other things in it that I'd rather not spoil, even though we are completely in our rush to do so. So I think it's just the general character of this film is just something that I very much enjoy and is in my sort of vein of comedy and approach to thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I really just find myself relating to almost all the characters and feeling like they're realistically portrayed and yet beautifully funny. It's the kind of, you know, probably if it wasn't a film, they'd be less funny, they'd be less funny throughout, but, you know, that's just real life. But, you know, I just enjoyed their universe. I enjoyed seeing a little bit behind the curtain in that industry. And, you know, there's just good character acting and funny, you know, dialogue between everyone. And I think that's why it's so compelling a watch.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well there. It's, yeah, all the characters are just very relatable and real. And that's the thing that I, like, kind of really enjoyed about it.
Yeah, and there's loads of just small characters that have a very minor part, but they don't feel like, oh, you could have just cut that person out of it. Like, whether it's the receptionist or the other sound editors and stuff.
Yeah, specifically everyone from the kind of sound studio were really good and were really memorable.
Yeah, there's a lot of funny comedy actors all working off each other in the sound editing department, with Dimitri Martin kind of the main focus there. And it just, there's a good chemistry, and it works really well.
I suppose the only other kind of real, like, big name in this film is Gina Davis, who kind of turns up at the end.
Yeah, just she's like a big time executive producer who makes the final decision on who is going to voice the new. Like, it's weird because they established that there's this movie franchise being made, a sort of tweeny, like teenage girl type, slightly older movie demographic film that's coming out, and it's a quadrilogy of like kind of Mad Max meets Amazon's kind of film that's going to be a bit like a sort of Twilight Market. And it's going to be voiced by one of the main characters, and Gina Davis is the one making the decision on who will get that job, and she gives a little, you know, speech that Abby mentioned earlier.
It's interesting that it was her actually, because I'm trying to remember the name of the foundation that she has, but she's been working really hard to get better female role models into TV specifically, but then also film by extension, because she did a study, I think. She was actually doing an academic thing, and she did a study for that, and she realised how woefully bad female role models are in television. So then she actually went out of her way to try and do something about it, and puts a lot of time, energy and money into doing this.
Yeah, and her character's speech is kind of right on point, and yeah, a little bit harsh in the dose of reality, but also a positive kind of, I'm a woman in power, I'm going to put more women in power, and that's kind of the point, is that the film industry doesn't really care about individuals and people, but there's a kind of bigger picture at play as well that is vaguely positive. I don't know. It's a very odd one, because she essentially,
it's an odd,
mean and positive.
Yeah, it's an odd moment right at the end, because it's supposed to be the kind of crescendo of the film, the kind of defining moment. But her speech is both kind of, it starts off kind of very optimistic, but then by the end, it just kind of like beats you down. Like, actually, It's not how you expect, and then you're just kind of left with a kind of weird note at the end.
Yeah, and again, it's that dodging the obvious rom-com narrative, where if it had been a traditional rom-com, it would have been an empowering speech of womanhood, and she would have, like, they would have high-fived, and she would have been a celebrated woman. But in fact, it was just a bit more like reality would be, where an executive is a bit more cynical than, you know, caring.
And like even though she's had the job and she's won this really big like victory for herself, it's like actually in the world of things, it's just another day.
Yeah. One of the odd things about the film that they have to do the voiceover for is it features a small cameo from Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, I forgot about that. It was really good.
What was kind of interesting is, even though it was meant to be this epic kind of Mad Max world of Amazons, it was very clear there was still only a budget in this film for three actors, and they had to film them either close up and give a hint that there was more, but really, yeah, that's just three women dressed up funny. There's no getting around that this is not an epic movie getting made. So the reality of this film, like, it felt wrong that they could only really show us an attempt at an epic movie. They couldn't really show us, you know. Actually, would you guys like to see this Amazonian movie? Can you remember what it was called? It was like Amazonian Apocalypse or something.
It was just, I think it was just called the Amazon Games, like the Hunger Games.
Ah. I maybe fancy that. But then, I quite like the idea of an apocalyptic world filled with masculine, freaky-looking women. So maybe that's...
Maybe. If it was like a B-movie kind of thing. But I know what you're saying. But then, you know, even movie trailers these days probably have a bigger budget than this film had altogether. So there's only so much you can do.
It was good that they got Cameron Diaz, because that added a sense of celebrity to it. Like, I know that they're all professional actors and celebrities in a sense, but Cameron Diaz is the right sort of woman for that kind of movie.
Yeah.
So I like that they actually had her in it. But yeah, how do we finish the podcast and rate this? Do we all come up with in a world summings up? I don't know.
Any kind of trailer cliches that anyone can think of, perhaps?
I thought of a voiceover thing that I like.
Go on.
In the bucket list, there's that moment when Morgan Freeman says something like, "And I left that can on the top of that mountain, and he would have liked that because it's illegal." that little piece.
So this idea that it's a Morgan Freeman, who's also used quite a lot for voiceovers to make them seem like the lovely tale of Chumley Wumleys who are going to learn a thing or two about a thing or two, and won't you know it, they did. You know, it's that kind of warm, syrupy voice that he has that makes everything seem wholesome and like a little moral tale. But you're saying it's like a bit like that, but it sort of twists and has a sort of funny, cynical edge to it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's just a short, pithy joke in there as well. So it's like, it's a nice, rich voiceover with a nice, crisp joke in it.
Yeah, it's got that biting satire as well, yeah. So other voiceover styles and types that this film is, I don't know. It's certainly not like that wacky, it's not the like wacky rom-com voice like, "Hey, in a world where people are weird and turn into bananas, wow, look at this, this guy's a banana, and then he's going to learn how to skateboard." You know, it's not that. It's kind of, I don't know, it's a bit more edgy and funny. I can't think of a good example. Anthony, any ideas?
Weirdly, it's the kind of film that wouldn't have a voiceover, if you know what I mean. It's too indie and kind of downbeat for kind of something like that, which is kind of weird given like the nature of the film itself.
Yeah, I guess it's, you know, cut together loads of sound bites and weird bits from the film that are kind of funny and weird and make you curious, rather than having someone come in and go, "In a world where one woman learns to deal with her dad and get over her foibles." You know, you can't really have a "in a world" voiceover on this film. It's not that kind of thing. Maybe it's just, it's a parody of the "in a world" voice. It's something that's, you know, like a rom-com traditionally is quite a cliche hack thing with an obvious narrative, and the "in a world" voiceover is done to death. And what this does is it takes the "in a world" style and pastiches it. So it is anything that uses the "inner world" style, but to set up a comedy, and it kind of mocks that style, and it kind of satirizes it. So it's a satire of something more mainstream and obvious, I think, isn't it?
Hmm.
So it's someone doing a slightly rubbish job and mocking the "inner world." No, it's someone doing a really good, funny version of an "inner world" voiceover for me, I think. One that I can't quite do because not witty enough off the top of my head.
It's a weird one. It's rather a niche kind of topic to think about. So the only other kind of weird kind of voiceover I can think of is the Hot Wheels guy. Like, it used to be a guy who did adverts for like little micro cars, and he talked like just impossibly fast.
Yeah, and they have to fit in that bit at the end to tell you all the legal terms and conditions and stuff.
Yeah, like, something
only available in shops. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, it's just impossibly fast and kind of funny.
But like, I can't really think of other voiceover examples other than "in a world."
Yeah. Well, the Hot Wheels guy is funny, and this film was funny, and that's as simple as it needs to be. When you make a comedy, if you make it funny, you've done your job. That's kind of the fact that it adds, extra stuff like representing women really well and portraying three-dimensional characters and creating a funny and interesting family story that's unique and different. The fact that it has that on top of being funny is a mega bonus, as far as I'm concerned.
I did think of one other thing. Maybe it's something like a kind of tongue-in-cheek version of a kind of saucy late night telephone line kind of thing.
Okay. Can you elaborate, or is that all you're giving us?
It's just going from the other one I just said, because this film is kind of so low key and kind of small and just kind of knowingly funny.
Yeah.
So it kind of actually is the opposite of the kind of micro machines guy, because that's like so big and so obvious. This is kind of like a kind of tongue in cheek slight parody of a kind of hello there, kind of erotic kind of telephone thing.
So I think that's good a place as any to end. What with it being the end. So, just leaves us to say goodbye, really, doesn't it?
Goodbye.
Bye.
In a world where Rich has needlessly ad-libbed the end of the podcast, will he come up with something witty to say, or just entirely fail? He's failed. What a dumbass. I said. Oh, Rich, don't ever ad-lib again. Script everything. Oh, dear. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, just a quick addendum for the podcast. We couldn't name some of the female voice actors that we liked, and I thought I should look them up and do a quick list at the end of some of my favourite female voice actors. Because there are loads of them, do a great job, and they need to be named and remembered, because it's important, sort of. I mean, it's only pop culture. But so this list, right? Nancy Cartwright is the voice of Bart Simpson. I think also Nelson and a few other side characters. So she's, quite a famous voice that a lot of people probably don't know the name of. So Nancy Cartwright, worth mentioning. Elizabeth Daly is the voice of Tommy from Rugrats, who I would have liked to have mentioned when I thought of it, but couldn't. She's also Buttercup in the Powerpuff Girls. These women all have a long list of credits. It's not just the one voice they're known for. They're good actors, generally. One of my favourite voice actors, who I did know the name of but didn't mention at the time, is Kristen Schaal. She is the voice of Louise in Bob's Burgers, and she's also the voice of Mabel in Gravity Falls. And she does loads of voice work and loads of acting, and she's very funny. One of my favourites. I also like Pamela Adlong. She's the voice of Bobby Hill in King of the Hill. She's also the voice of Spinelli, who I think I mentioned in the podcast. She's also a great actor as well. They're all, just take it as read, they're all great actors, and I like them in other stuff than just their famous roles. Also worth mentioning, I think, is Mary Kay Bergman. She does a lot of the voices in South Park. She's rather good as well. Katie Sagal, the voice of Leela from Futurama, as well as, appearing in acting roles as well, like Sons of Anarchy and things. So those are just some of my favourites. I don't know what Anthony and Abby would have thought. And I figured it was worth mentioning them, because Inner World was kind of about how women are underappreciated in the world of film and TV. So there you go. Some of my favourite female voice actors anyway. This is the proper end of the podcast now. Now's the end. So I'll say goodbye again. Goodbye.